At the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two. We just talked about the situation in New York, and we actually have got David Dunk, who can further weigh in on the situation in New York. Sure that he and his staff, as well as his client base, thrilled to get going the first week in June. My reason for reaching out to David as one of the many horsemen who grew and learned the trade under the watchful eye of Woody Stevens, and with the passing of 49er over the weekend at 35. That'll make you feel old, David. Good morning.
I got a birthday coming up. I know I'm getting older. Good thing I don't feel as old as my number says I am. How are you, Steve?
Great. I'm the same way. Well, and Dave, I thought of you, and I thought of Denise and Phil. I think Phil Gleaves had already gone out on his own by 87, right?
Phil went on his own, and also Bill had left, Bill Badgett. So
I forgot about Billy.
Yeah, Bill left, and he was the point person to go to Aiken with the two-year-olds. And the winter of 86, 87, I was fortunate enough to be able to go and take that position. And in that first crop of two-year-olds was 49er.
How about that?
Obviously he's got a very special place in my heart for a horse that, you know, besides something maybe that I've trained on my own. But, it was just the greatest experience. I can tell you, Steve, the first time I saw the roster that was going to go to Aiken for the winter, and it was about 22-year-olds. Most of them were broken at Claiborne, and about Thanksgiving time, they'd head to Aiken, South Carolina, and that's where the Woody's two-year-old division was. The roster was Nijinsky's, Mr. Prospector's, Danzig. It was unbelievable, and, you know, I was a kid that came from Finger Lakes, so even to this day, the closest I get to those pedigrees is looking at them in a catalog page. So, it was a really, really cool horse, a beautiful demeanor, a very kind horse. And I tell you, I was just looking at his PPs a while ago. I saw someone, they were posted, maybe you posted on Twitter. And so just kind of a recollection of his races. But, just a really, really neat horse.
Talk a little bit about the lead up, because he debuted at Belmont in mid-July, and it's amazing when you think about it, you know, how effective, whenever you look at a classic distance horse, it's always amazing to me that they can be as talented, even if they're just precocious. I mean, or even if you just write it off to being precocious, you know, for a horse to win the way he did at first asking, and then to go from there. I mean, just talk about, you know, watching him develop and how quickly, you know, how clearly it was that that he was going to be a talent.
Yeah, you know, early on, obviously it was a really different experience for me with that first crop of two-year-olds to be around that kind of quality from the beginning. He is the first horse that I bucked shins with in Aiken in that crop. I remember that. We cooled him out, and fired him. That was probably in March. Eased him back in the training. And, didn't make his first start till then. Probably one of the first two-year-olds that we ran. I'll tell you, I remember we had a really regiment routine, what he did, and most of the old timers, how they trained, and you know that, how they worked them. If they blew out the day before the race, it was 3/8. 2 days before, it was a half mile. 3 days before, it was 5/8. And he hadn't worked in like 4 days. And I remember we, the morning of the race, we went upstairs in the clubhouse, and Woody wanted to blow him out a little bit the morning of the race. So Eddie Maple was with us, and it was a little different than what we really had done with anything else, and we took him and backed him up to the maybe 3.5 on the main track at Belmont and turned him around and let him blow out a little bit down the lane. And I know I remember Eddie just looking at me, and I'm like, hey, this guy knows what he's doing. So anyways, and that afternoon he went back out there and won. But, you know, he's a really, really good two-year-old. You know, won the Champagne. It was a big race. And, you know, if you remember, there was some controversy with this, obviously with this horse. One is a two-year-old and then is a three-year-old. But as a two-year-old, he won the Champagne, and he was owned wholly by Claiborne, Seth Hancock, and the family. They controlled 100% of this horse. There were no partners. And, you know, they loved, and Woody loved, they loved to run in Keeneland. And so he won the Champagne, went back to Keeneland 2 weeks later, won the Breeders' Futurity. And I'm not sure what the date of the Breeders' Cup was that year, but, you know, it was already made a decision that he would run the Breeders' Futurity and not go to California. And, you know, he ended up being champion two-year-old versus the Horse of Wayne. It might have been Success Express. I'm not sure. The horse for Eugene Klein that won the Breeders' Cup that year. And then 49er was champion two-year-old. So, and the idea then, back then, was Woody needed a little time in between to crank him back up for the three-year-old season. And then he comes back in early February and starts off in the Hutchinson. So I think about this horse every year when we're on the Triple Crown trail, just that in today's day and age, boy, we train these three-year-olds so much differently, get them ready for the first Saturday in May. You know, everyone's worried about how many starts they're going to have. Is three too many? Only run them twice. Where, you know, this horse had five starts before he got to the Derby, and, you know, as we know, it's a pretty grueling race to be ready to run a mile and a quarter the first Saturday in May.
You mentioned Eddie, and I reached out to him, and he yielded to you to carry the day, and Eddie rode him all the way through the Florida Derby, and then Pat Day gets a stretch, and Pat couldn't get a photo taken with him. And that includes, you mentioned the Derby, you know, there's plenty of people, I think, that bet on him at 5-1 that are still muttering.
Eddie was a phenomenal rider, was obviously Woody's go-to rider. You know, and in his career, especially that span of Belmont's, you know, there were decisions to be made, and sometimes Woody or, you know, Eddie got on the other horse, and, you know, Pink Eye obviously got lucky and got on a few of the good ones. You know, sometimes these horses got to the three-year-old year, as we know, even in today's day and age, sometimes you defer to clients and they make a rider change. But, you know, Eddie certainly rode this horse really well. Yeah, he didn't win with Pat. You know, horse ran a gutsy race in the Derby, but a great ride by Gary on Winning Colors.
Yep.
And, you know, as it turns out, that filly is, I was thinking about it this morning, that filly's one of the best five fillies in the last 50 years or whatever, you know, whatever number you want to put her on the top of. And then obviously the controversy and the Preakness, you know, and then that race kind of wiped them out a little bit, and we freshened them up a little bit and geared them up for the summer campaign.
And he came back strong. I mean, you know, when you say freshened up, I mean, Preakness was May 21st that year, and, you know, he really only got, what, a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks, taking it easy before, yeah, getting them ready with that allowance before the Haskell?
Exactly. So this was freshening up with back then with Woody. He didn't breathe for 3 weeks. So, and I will tell you, Steve, that horse bounced back so well. And that next 3 to 4 weeks, it was unbelievable. You know, he lightened up out of the Preakness when he shipped back from Pimlico. No, I stayed back at Belmont. I didn't get to travel or see him run early in his 3-year-old year. But when he shipped back up, he was pretty drawn up. I was surprised. It took quite a bit out of him. But he really blossomed. And the goal was the Haskell and the Travers. And a decision had been made. I don't know if Pat couldn't ride him in the Haskell, but they went to Pinkai, who Woody and Claiborne had been very successful with in the past, including Swell. But obviously, they didn't need Pinkai to come to Monmouth to ride him an allowance race. That Monmouth was really nice enough. I think they put up an allowance race so he could have this horse could have a prep. And I remember Woody saying to Seth, "What about the girl?" And he had never ridden Julie before, and Seth was all on board for it. And the first time he rode Julie was 49er in that allowance race. And, you know, he had given her some instructions, and he broke the track record that day. And she came back, and she had looked at the tote board when she came back, and you know, he won easy 7 lengths or so. And she was a little scared, you know, she's like basically some jock in the morning, some kid in the morning going too fast on one, and came back, and Woody came back and looked at it and said, "I love to see him run." And, you know, that was a prep race a couple of weeks before the Haskell, and then, you know, 2 phenomenal races to watch between 49er and Seeking the Gold in the Haskell and the Travers. Just, I know a couple of years ago I saw the replays of those races again, just, you know, a nose finish. Those two horses just nose and nose through the stretch, just 2 amazing races, and nothing against Seeking the Gold. They were just 49er was all heart.
You know, we should mention it because he beat Seeking the Gold in the Travers as well with McCarran. But even that allowance race, you win by 7, and Slough City Slough was a nice horse, and he just ran away from him.
Yeah, really, you know, this was he was a lovely horse. He was really kind, really rateable. You know, like I said, Stevie's good horses do a lot of different things. He won, you know, at 3/4. He won mile and 8th races, but he was just, he could run a mile and a quarter. But just a really kind horse. But he was a really clean horse. Went on into the fall. I was looking at the TP, a great recollection of the Woodwards. He just got beat by Ali Sheba, which, even in today's world, a 3-year-old against older horses is a huge effort. You know, went to the Breeders' Cup. I remember I didn't go there, but it was a really dark, almost nighttime without lights. But, you know, a pretty decent effort, but he was such a valuable horse that, you know, he went to stud early. You know, it's, I'm sure, an economic decision that all of us would have had to make the same decision, but he would have made a really, really nice older horse. And unfortunately, we didn't get to see that. But a great race record. Listen, ran 13 times as a 3-year-old. We don't see that anymore. So.
No. And, you know, from 7/8 to a mile and a quarter, you know, the race you kind of skipped over, and you know, that is a real footnote, Dave, that probably should touch on, was the jockey strike and the situation where Billy Fox ends up, you know, Billy ends up getting a shot on him. It's got to be one of the biggest thrills of Billy's career.
Yeah, you know, we did, a couple years ago, it's the 30 years or something, Naira did a little documentary, Bobby Allen or something, did an art, big article about it, and we were talking about that. Yeah, so that was, that was an unfortunate situation that wouldn't happen in today's world with a jockey strike. So, we were riding, exercise riders and whatever. So it was a big deal on Saturday. You know, Billy Fox was riding. Pinkai flew in to ride this horse. But he met with some of the riders in New York, and respect to them, he didn't ride. So Billy Fox was the backup. You know, he went way too fast early, and, man, he beat this horse up. It's a stretch, but it wasn't pretty, but he got the money. I'm pretty sure it was $500,000 back then. So if it was, that was a lot of money. It was a big payday for Billy Fox, and you know, it just showed you, as Woody used to tell us, you know, a good horse will make any trainer and rider look good. So he was a good horse. But yeah, just a lot of controversy. It's interesting to think back about that. As a two-year-old, did not go to California for the Breeders' Cup. There's a little bit of controversy for that. It was early in its stages. And we elected to stay east and not go west. He still was two-year-old champion. The controversy in the Preakness with winning colors. And then obviously with the jock strike. So, yeah, this horse has got a lot of footnotes in history.
You know, you mentioned the early departure to Stand Stud. I don't. It's hard to believe because every horse, you know, in history, everyone, you know, ran until they were four and five. So this must be a misprint. How can it be that a horse in 1988 went to the breeding shed?
Shocking. Yeah, that was different. I think it's, you know, it's an
no,
economic
decision.
I'm kidding.
No,
I know. But it was an economic decision because he was owned solely by Claiborne. Maybe it was different if it was partners. It would have been cool to see him race, Steve. And obviously, he didn't hit right away. He was sold for a lot of money to go to Japan. And, you know, fortunately, he was really successful over there. And, you know, I'd like to say, you know, kudos to everyone in Japan and thank them for given this horse, yeah, an amazing life. Like you said, to live to be 35 years old. I saw some pictures of him last year, and just amazing. And, yeah, so just a really special horse, you know, and it's fun to look back upon him.
In the downtime, and not that there was a lot, you know, with him. I mean, he really even between end of October, the Breeders' Futurity, and you know, then the start of the season with the Hutchison, where he actually got beat by Perfect Spy, and just could not get to him, and you know, there wasn't really a lot. Yeah, there's that little break between the Preakness and the return, the prep for the Haskell. You said he, you know, he was rateable and kind. What was he like, you know, in the off hours on the shed?
Yeah, he was just kind of a medium size, typical of a Mr. Prospector. Like I say, just a really kind horse, a really easy horse to be around. You know, we talk about his three-year-old campaign. You know, we ran in the Hutchinson, the Fountain Youth, the Florida Derby. You know, and every year I say this to people. I mean, he went to Keeneland, he ran in the Lafayette and the Lexington. So, you know, and twice got beat by a really good horse in Risen Star. So, you know, a pretty good crop of three-year-olds. It's different. They weren't afraid to run on them, you know, and I think part of it is you didn't have to win every prep race, but you had to get conditioned to be able to run a mile and a quarter the first Saturday in May. So, but he allowed you to do that. He was a pretty laid-back horse and, you know, around the barn, and even to train him. You know, he was easy to train. So, yeah, he was lovely to be around.
Now, yeah, and you know, you look at the horses that he beat, and you know, one of the more interesting sidebars to his career. How about as a 2 year old? Do you remember who he beat? Who was second to him in that debut?
I do not, Steve. You'd have to tell me. I have to look at that.
Dynaformer.
A phenomenal grass sire. Isn't that amazing?
How funny is that? How crazy is that?
Wow.
The Dynaformer, yeah. that they came out of the same maiden race. Unbelievable. You know, some other names, Crusader Sword, Tejano, later on, Notebook, going up. You mentioned, of course, Risen Star beat him in Winning Colors. I mentioned Slough City Slough, Seeking the Gold, Brian's Time. You know, even though he got beaten the Woodward by Ali Sheba, you know, neck back to Wacoit. You know, that's a race, by the way, that doesn't get nearly enough historic attention, that 88 Woodward. You know, Precisionist was in that Naira Mile field, by the way.
Correct, yeah. So, yeah, it's phenomenal as you and I get older, to look at back at the history of some of these horses and, you know, in all of these really good races, but the quality of the fields, you know, it's not like he just won these races. He beat a lot of good horses, and horses that went on to be, some of them went on to be really good sires.
Well, and how about you? When did you get some 49ers before he exported?
I never did get to train a horse by a 49er, the few crops that he had. You know, oddly enough, some of them were a little cantankerous, a little difficult. Coronado's Quest, you know, Shoghad, was a little quirky. That always surprised me because he was so laid back. But now I had a horse that he was the Broodmare sire of, see, but I never got to train one by 49er. And obviously, he's, you know, probably gone too soon. But, you know, it's great that he had a great career in Japan.
David Donk, and just reminiscing with the word coming from Japan, the passing of 49er 35. He just had his own birthday weeks ago. And, I mean, that is a ripe old age. And 49er, the son of Mr. Prospector out of the Tom Rolf Mayer file. We'll do some of that pedigree stuff with Sid on Wednesday, undoubtedly. Dave, out of curiosity, who else would have been around there? Did Denise maybe get on him in the mornings ever?
I don't think she did, no. Pretty much... you know, Ronnie McKenzie was a really good exercise rider back then. Ronnie's not with us anymore. Passed away years ago. Was an English rider. Nelson was there. Nelson's in the Philadelphia area. So, you know, Sandy was there. The groom that rubbed him was an older girl who's since passed away. So, listen, it's been a long time. That was 32 years ago.
Yeah.
So,
it's hard. It's just crazy.
Time is flying here. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, and the time has flown as we talk about 49er with Dave Donk. Dave, a quick hit on how you fared here and the news over the weekend and how much relief there is among your staff and your team and as well as your owners. Some thoughts about getting going again the first week in June.
Yeah, obviously a big sigh of relief. You're an owner, and I think for all of us, for you know, those are our customers, let alone that it is my business. And, you know, very difficult situation. But listen, we were obviously in the epicenter. You know, Nassau County, I believe, was the worst county in the country. But I can't tell you what an amazing job through the whole process with Naira, Nitha, Joe Applebaum, and Rick Schatzberg, and Will, and everyone involved. And with Beth, and the chaplaincy, I'm sure you've read a lot and know you've talked, you know, Alberto Chavez and his wife Karen and Nick Harris, you know, with Naira, the job that they did, even with the Department of Health, the Gaming Commission, even the governor's office, the care that they gave all these individuals back here. We've all seen a lot of people with cases. Fortunately, here it was quite mild. But here, anyone that's in the New York area knows of someone probably that got really sick or didn't make it. You know, we've weathered the storm, trying to do the right thing and have a lot of protocols in place. I'm sure you read about, you know, we did an antibody testing for over 850 people on Saturday. It was a phenomenal turnout. I think it showed the dedication and the compassion that everyone back here, the grooms, hot walkers, exercise riders, forms, assistants, that have for themselves and each other. But then to hear the news on Saturday and, you know, that there is a date, which is great. So we're not all kind of left out in the wind. And some people are in the industry, in the country. But it's phenomenal to see Kentucky and California back up running. And yeah, it's a big relief, and in the near future, no one will ever complain about running at Aqueduct again in the winter. So You know, it'll be fun. You know, listen, I tell you, yesterday, I'm a NASCAR fan, just to watch a live NASCAR race yesterday, or, you know, they had a golf match with the four guys, just going out there, and just to, we're all sports fanatics, so it's fun to get a little normalcy back in our lives, and we'll push on.
David Dunk, everybody, and as we always say, one of the great sayings in sport, honk if you love Dunk. Dave, thank you.
Steve, thank you very much. I appreciate being on.
Always great. David Dunk, everybody, who does a tremendous job. And you can follow David. He, I don't know how much tweeting he does, but he's got the EQ.
I'm smart enough not to post. So
you're just watching. You're just watching.
I love to follow on Twitter. I love to follow. You know, like I'm going to say journalists, but especially in racing. You know, all the handicappers, the speed figure guys. I'm curious of everyone's opinion. A lot of great stuff. A lot of smart people. I'd like to say, you know, we never pay enough attention in our sport about the gambler. Those guys are, there's a lot of sharp guys out there. And I love to follow international racing. So, but, you know, I'm smart enough not to post and get myself in trouble. So, if I was a journalist, it would be my job and I would certainly love to. But you know, you get a little older, you get a little wiser. So.
Well, I'm just looking. You haven't tweeted in 7 years, and it's funny. Your last tweet was a announcement of racing canceled at Aqueduct. So it's
you're right.
You could pick up, and people wouldn't know what happened. The November 24th, 2013, when time stood still on Dave Dunk's timeline. David, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure, Steve, and I hope you're doing everyone's well. So.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing you soon, and hopefully, you know, either a trip downstate maybe, and an opportunity to I'm not sure what the format's going to be to watch racing at Belmont, or you know what the. You know what the accessibility is going to be yet. We'll watch that, but we'll see Dave at some point soon. He's one of my favorite visitors. Let's take a break here. We've got the second half. We're past the bottom of the hour as we appreciate the tremendous career of 49er. And you got a lot of little tidbits in there, some things there that I didn't know about him. I was, you know, I was really just starting to get, you know, become a serious about the game right about then too, as it happens, late 80s. Dave Dunk, and you know, we've talked many times about the factory of the font of horsemen that came, you know, out of Woody's shed row. Dunk and Gleaves and Reynolds and Billy Badgett and there's more that I'm not even thinking of. Let's take a break. We've got Sheree DeBow coming up. We've got Ryan Mahan to pay tribute to Chris Caldwell, the Keeneland auctioneer. Mark Glatt is going to join us as well this morning. So second half, stay with us.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice choices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When they kick at your front door, how are you gonna come? With your hands on your head or on the trigger of your gun? When the law break in, how are you gonna go? Shot down on the pavement or waiting in death row? You can crush us, you can bruise us, you have to answer to, whoa, the guns of Brixton.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes to the top of the hour. We're going to talk to Mark Glatt in a little bit, as well as Ryan Mahan from Keeneland. Right now, though, Cherie DeVoe, who had the big day to kick off the season at Churchill, and two winners, and now sharing the trainer title leadership with Billmott and Brad Cox. Cherie, good morning. Congratulations.
Thank you, Steve.
Cherie, I got to say, you won the first one with Dinar, and both of these off the turf. And I said to myself, you know, looking at the nightcap, I said, boy, Cherie could win this race too. I mean, talk about, you know, getting ready and just even being able to run had to be a relief, let alone winning two on the season opener.
Well, it was a nice way to get back home, to get back running. You know, you can see Dinar, we ran him once at Gulfstream and he just didn't seem to like the track. There were no other excuses for him. So a horse like him had been sitting on Simmer since that race, with nowhere to go. We, have planned on getting everything regrouped in the wintertime and point for Keeneland as soon as, you know, it was supposed to start. So it threw a big wrench in our plans when, you know, the whole the pandemic came along, and then you're sitting with a good group of horses that you have ready to run and feel really positive about, and then just trying to keep them ticking over until with no date. You know, in the beginning we had no date in mind, so just trying to keep them walking that fine line of not doing too much but staying fit and happy was a challenge. So I'm glad that the patience and everything ended up working out.
Trying to think about where you were, and because you had the horses at Payson, how quickly did you shift and get out of Florida when you had the opportunity, or just as soon as Churchill announced and those ship-in dates, so there really wasn't a lot of time to move and get set up and run.
Well, no, it wasn't, but, you know, thankfully we have a really great group of people working with us who had been ready. Every biweekly I would call each of the stall superintendents here and at Keeneland, and I didn't have any answer, but, you know, I had everybody ready to go. And then as soon as the announcements were made, we had just shipped everything from Payson into Churchill Downs training. And then as the vans are unloading here, they told us we could ship in to Keeneland. So it was a busy week for us. We're all a little bit worn out today because you go from really being on a bit of a working vacation to being extremely busy. I've clocked a lot of miles on the road from Lexington to Louisville, two trips back and forth days, just trying to get everything, supplies, horses, where they needed to be. But, you know, it all worked out, and we're all just happy to be back home.
Well, and certainly the way the horses ran on Saturday had to help. How challenging was the entry process? And of course, you came in, it certainly didn't hurt, to come in the way you did as an MTO with Dinar, and Reagan's Edge was, entered for the grass, and then you ran anyway. Talk about, knowing how deep these fields were going to be, and looking at these first four overnights, I mean, it's eye-crossing how many horses want in.
Yeah, and you just have to hope that that luck is on your side, number one, just to even get in the races. There, for a horse like Dinar, he's more flexible. That proved he has been ready, and I have to commend the ownership group on him for being as patient as they were and taking listening to the guidance that was given to them about that particular horse, because, it gets awfully tempting to ship a horse to Oaklawn or to, at the time at Fairgrounds. And then it's, well, there's an MTO, and that was the best case scenario. So going in, he's ready to run. They ship in. It's an easy ship. It's overnight. He's been to the track before. We know he likes the surface. It's all luck. And then Reagan's Edge, she trains great on the dirt. She comes from her female family has a lot of turf on it. It wasn't a shot in the dark. We were going to put her in there, and it was a really tough spot. She's 30-1 morning line on the turf. But she had been training so well, I wasn't concerned on either surface for her, because she had her one race back after breaking her maiden at Gulfstream, which we were ideally using to prep her for Keeneland, get a race into her down south, bring her up, have her primed and ready to go. So she had been training great, really just coming into the race how you would want. And the fact that it came off and she ran on the dirt, running down the horse at the very wire, it was just really, really nice. And it's exciting, and we're very thankful for it.
You know, when it came to Dinar, you know, knowing that that he was going to draw in, he was obviously one of kind of a couple in there that maybe three that you felt you had to use. Reagan's Edge was funny, Cherie, because I used her as a C, and she was literally my fifth horse, and had her on as a C on the tickets. And so when I saw her coming, I sort of shook my head, because I said to Tina, we were watching, and I said, Cherie's a price in here, but she could win this race. And then neither of us put in a saver, and I was just a little nauseous. This is one that tell us about the owner, Cherie, David Engordo.
The owner is actually my stepdaughter, Reagan. It's a really neat little story. We bought her at OBS, and just David didn't really have a client for her, and we were sitting at dinner at Tony's in Lexington, and we said, why don't we give Reagan, who was there, the filly that we used to call her Gingy, because she's a small little chestnut horse. She looks more of a quarter horse than a thoroughbred. She's just very small, compact, very fast looking, and the filly is just really sweet. And in the beginning days, Reagan was just getting around the barn and learning about the backside, and the horse is actually a babysitter. She stands in there, takes pictures with her. I see her FaceTiming her friends. So the filly, it's been such a blessing for our family, as well as having a racing career. It's been a really fun experience to share with Reagan, the person, as well.
Well, that's great. That's terrific. And I was laughing, of course, because those of you that are around the game closely know that David is the husband, as we say. Talk a little bit about the Al Rashid team that owns Dinar.
So that is headed by a gentleman named Bill Clissey, and they had approached David about, getting started 2 years ago, shortly after we had gotten married, about starting a venture here in the United States. They're over, I believe they're in Kuwait. David had lined up a couple big name trainers for him, and he had horses there. And I was at Timonium, and I just had met him, and I had met Bill, and Bill's a very nice person, and he's really learning at expedited rate about the ways of racing over here. And he was just asking me some questions, and after the Belmont, he had said that, they would like to send a horse to me, and I had to go and pick out a horse. I went to June OBS, and I found Dinar over at Eddie Woods Consignment. And, he's just a big horse that took a while to get to the races, and he's a bit hard on himself. If you ever watch him gallop, he doesn't make it easy. So he's been not a project, but there's a lot of conversations on, a race will come up and maybe a small issue might happen, or the horse just isn't training as well as we'd like. And they have been really great about and receptive about listening to any suggestions that we make. And, they are under the thought that, if you're patient, it will be rewarded. And so far, it's been good with a horse like Dinar.
Well, and as you mentioned, when it came to coming home to Churchill, which is where he broke his maiden on the big closing weekend, the big Stars of Tomorrow card, and that's a fair moniker too, Stars of Tomorrow, because this feels like a horse that is taking the next step. This, this was a big step forward too on the speed figure front. I think I gave you that number from the other day. What was it? 80,
88.
An 88.
Yep.
And so he's knocking on the door.
If you look at his PPs, his first couple races, he has run well every single time. He got in a lot of trouble in Saratoga. I think he was green starting out. First race at Keeneland, got pinched back at the start, came with a run to finish third. He was green and hanging in a second start. I feel if he should have won a race, he broke his maiden. That probably was it. Got in trouble at Keeneland, at Saratoga. And then we put the blinkers on him, and that seemed to have been the key to him. We don't train him in the blinkers because he wants to do too much in the morning. But on race day, it focuses him enough to where he's not hanging or looking at the other horse and not wanting to pass them. He gets a clear run and he just goes forward. But he's a beautiful horse. He's a big, he's a horse that comes out and everyone asks who he is because he's big and flashy. He's a big chestnut with lots of white on him. And he trains like a horse that wants to do good, bigger things. So, he's got all the tools. It's just taken him a while to put it all together. And, we've been feeling really confident with him every step along the way. And when they throw in a head scratcher like a Gulfstream, you just have to regroup and hope that, you take him back. And it was important for me to bring him back to Churchill because we know he likes the track. He'd already run two very good races over it. So then it was a fair chance for us to see where, which way he was going to go in his career. And he stepped forward like we were hoping he would.
Well, this is an interesting prospect going forward. We're going to talk about another three-year-old of yours in a second. He's a four-year-old, so it's a matter of, moving along as you see fit. And just looking at the family, this actually has been a very productive family, and he is on his way to being the dam's biggest earner, Internal Affair. And there happens to be a two-year-old full brother that's out there. He's been named a Defeater. Can look for him. And then there is a yearling by Classic Empire that is behind. So we'll keep an eye. In terms of running style, he's out of the Orientate Mare and by Union Rags. It sure looks like that. One turn configuration is to his liking. Elongated sprints. Do you feel that way? 7/8 to, to a mile and change.
Well, yeah. I mean, the one turn mile. He's never had to go two turns, not yet. It is on the table of discussion for him. We're going to make sure he comes out of this race, and we're trying to plot where we go next with him, which, we have to get stake schedules out to get a clear picture of where we would like to go, the trajectory of his path going forward. But we do want to see if stretching them out, mile and a 16th, mile and eighth, does not strike me as a mile and a quarter horse, but I'm not going to hold that, firm. But, we would like to see if he will stretch out around two turns, like a mile and a 16th, and just take that the next step and see if, because it will open up a few more doors for him if he could just go two turns a little bit farther than the mile or 7/8.
Excellent. Well, Cherie DeVoe is with us off the two wins from Saturday and looks to keep things going later this week stylishly on Thursday. Give us a little preview of Thursday's race.
Well, we got to hope that it doesn't have some weird chance of rain right now. The forecast looks good because we are not in good graces with Mother Nature when we enter her. It seems to just not work out. I mean, I think she ran at Gulfstream and there wasn't really any rain in the forecast and a downpour of a couple races before her. In her PPs, it shows she went to California. We had her ready to run on Derby Day in May of last year and ended up having to ship her to California because she just couldn't catch a break. But she's doing really, really well. that she actually happened to be the second horse that ever arrived when I went out on my own. So, you know, there's a little bit of an emotional counterpart to it. But she's been training extremely well. You know, she has a race on the dirt, which is not a surface she wants to be on. But she got a little, you know, she got fitness out of it. So I'm really looking forward to getting her out there and on the turf, as long as Mother Nature is agreeable. But she should have a good showing of herself.
Yeah, she and she's an interesting property, too, because she's a horse that in these turf sprints, you know, typically, you know, you want a speed burner that is immediately involved. And she, curiously, is, you look at the maiden win and the allowance win that came at Del Mar going five, and she, you know, she settled and came with a run, and going five furlongs, you know, that's a very nice tactical gear to have. She, a five-year-old mare, and not a lot of mileage on her either, Cherie.
No. You know, our main goal with her eventually down the line is if we could get her some sort of stakes placing. But with
sure.
the running style, it opens up a lot more opportunity for her because there's generally a ton of speed in those races, and she has the tactical way of running where she can, you know, swing herself, work out
yeah.
a trip. As horses are tiring, she can come running.
No, she's you know, clearly useful and you know, clearly if spotted and used you know, used judiciously, that goal of some black type for her certainly, you know, certainly would be an asset. Arnold Zetcher had her originally in Bretter, and you know, he's got a nice broodmare band, so I'm sure there's some family strength in behind. Speaking of family strength, Cherie, I want to ask you about one more horse, and
okay.
This is I think you probably can guess where I'm going. You got Remanded.
Uh-huh.
The elusive quality filly, right, that won first asking in February. This is, I see Sleepless Dixie K&G, and Kelly Breen trained Sleepless Dixie, I think, and she was a stake horse, I think. First out winner, going six at Gulfstream. What's her status?
She came out of that race in really good shape. We, again, had a running go at Keeneland. There was an allowance race for her. But, unfortunately, this was one of the negative things about what we were doing. A lot of horses, we boxed off on their training for a while, bring them every 10 days, 2 weeks, just to keep them fit. Well, when we started to get them ready and gear them up for Churchill, she breezed and put in her first subpar effort in the morning, and came back and was very sick. We scoped her. She had a lot of mucus. So we had to back off on her again, and she's since breezed back really extremely well right before we left. She's at Keeneland right now with Baroness. They're actually training partners in the morning. And she's back, but she needs a bit more time because we had backed off on her. We couldn't get her right back up like the rest of them. We had to take a step back with her being sick. But, you know, she's there. She looks great. She put in her first breeze back from being sick. It went 48 and change and galloped out in a minute and change, 101 on pace and track, and did it very easily. It's just going to take us some time to get her back into a race. They offered a 7 furlong A other than for straight 3-year-olds on opening day, and it overfilled, and it's back on the card for Friday. So I'm hoping that there's another option here in the second book of Churchill. And then, again, with her, she performs well, and we will be looking for stakes for her in her next following start.
Well, boy, it didn't take her long, really, to come back from, you know, from the little sickness episode because she has fired three straight bullets. Best of 33, best of 6, and then best of 28. This all since mid-April, April 11th, April 28th, and then right before you left Florida and broke camp. So this is a filly to watch, remanded. And sure enough, Sleepless Dixie was Georgia Laurie Hall and Kelly Breen. And she was a nice filly that made almost 200,000. Well, Cherie, I'm sure it's great to be home. Everybody likes being in Florida, but there's only so much Florida you can take.
Especially during the pandemic, you can't do anything. You can't go to the beach. You can't go to the restaurant. So the nice weather.
I love it. Well, so if I was to ask David about your cooking, how did that go? Who was doing the cooking?
I'm actually not a bad cook. I actually can hold my own. I was trying to make Reagan pancakes in between coming home from Keeneland and going to Churchill. That didn't go well, but I actually can hold my own. And you know me, I try to really cook healthy. So there's no fried chicken, but I can make a really nice roasted chicken dinner if need be.
Very nice. We may have to take you up. So you didn't take after Chuck when it comes to eating habits.
No, I was told one of my friends was joking around when I was at Belmont early on, and I hope this doesn't offend too many people, but there was something that was healthy option, and there was something that was not healthy, and my friend said, "Now you don't want to go and get that trainer's bod." So I have to work on it.
And of course, Cherie, long time with Chad Brown, and before that with Chuck Simon, and doing very nicely out on her own. Cherie, I don't know when we'll see you, but well done. Congratulations and continued success.
Thank you, Steve. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Absolutely. And Cherie DeVoe, if you want to follow Cherie, and Cherie actually has done a very nice job with her social media stuff, including on Instagram, where you get whenever there's an entry, she's got like an image with the logo, with her saddle towel logo, her workout pad, and the CD, Cherie DeVoe. So follow her on Instagram. And then on the Twitter front, I've got to remind myself I used to be Riri, and I think I guess she has stuck with Riri DeVoe. Yeah, she has. Cherie DeVoe. Got to know Cherie very well when, got to work with Chuck and, Cherie, a hell of an exercise rider in her own right, too, and doing very well. And that was a great way to start the season. That there's a few there that remanded looks. This looks like a potentially explosive type of a horse. We're going to stay here to some degree. We're going to get Mark Glatt. He's going to join us after. We're not going to really take a break. We couldn't get the 49er audio up in time for Dave Donk. But we're going to listen now instead of taking a time out. This is the Travers and the 87 Travers with Seeking the Gold. You should really, really enjoy. And Chris McCarron, his only ride on 49er. But for those of you that were there, the 1988 Travers Stakes.